The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Oh, yeah. It's November, my favorite month of the year.
You know what November is known for?
My birthday.
Eating a lot of food.
Is that what it's known for?
It is. It's Thanksgiving, dude. Turkey
National
Day.
Adam Day.
Motherfucking Scorpios in the house.
Well, here's the thing. I like November because this is, I think, one of my favorite.
Because your favorite host's birthday is in?
No, that's not why. One of our favorite promotions. For the month of November, check this out. Enroll in any MAPS bundle. That's the sexy athlete bundle. You could do the build your butt bundle or the 9 months of exercise programming RGB bundle. Enroll in any of those bundles and this is your pick now. We've never done this before. Your pick of any of our guides, absolutely free. We have the intermittent fasting survival guide and the nutrition survival guide and the occlusion training survival guide. Any one of those, it's actually not a survival guide, it's just occlusion guide. But anyway, those guides, you can pick for free if you enroll in a bundle. This is what you do. Enroll in a bundle. After you purchase, email admin@mindpumpmedia.com. Include your name, your address. Oh, and by the way, you get a free shirt. I forgot that. Son of a bitch, Adam, you didn't remind me.
I was going to wait for you to finish where to send it, then I was going to go back over. It's okay.
Yeah. So you get a free MAPS shirt, bonus too, right? There.
Yeah, you can.
A guide and a shirt.
You get to pick. Okay, so if you get any of the bundles, you can go and you can pick any MAPS shirt that you want. So let's say you're missing MAPS white shirt or you're missing green or you're missing red, whatever. You can pick whatever MAPS shirt that you want. That's absolutely free. Plus, you get to pick one of these guides. Now, in order to get that, here's the key and the most important piece, though, is after you purchase, you ring everything up, you got it, it's in your thing, then you need to go and send an email. This goes to Doug. This is where Doug can handle this. You go to his admin@mindpumpradio.com.
Mindpumpmedia.com.
When you go to the admin@mindpumpmedia.com,
there you go.
You're going to include your name, your address, your shirt size, which one you want. So I want MAPS red. I'm an extra large, plus the guide you want. You send that over to the admin@mindpumpmedia.com email. Then Doug will get that out to you.
Beautiful. We only messed up 10 times.
Whoa.
You'll get it.
If you want to pump your body and expand your mind, there's only one place to go. Mind Pump. Mind Pump. With your hosts, Sal DiStefano, Adam Schaefer, and Justin Andrews.
All right. You sound
weird, man.
I do?
No, not
that's
you.
Normal.
Me?
No, Sal. Yeah.
I sound weird?
Does
yeah.
he?
Do I sound okay? How's my meter looking?
You know what? You might
it sounds not, normal to me.
Yeah, you know what? You might not be able to fix that.
It's just normal.
It's unfixable.
Yeah. It just
So Adam, you have a cold? You're getting a cold too?
No, actually my sister sent that to me and so
again.
I sent it to you.
What do you mean?
She asked me about...
She's getting a cold.
Yeah, I just decided to take it to be preventative because if you are coming down with sore throat, I want to be ahead of the game.
Well, I don't know. Can you get... Maybe someone can look this up. Can you get a cold? Because like Adam gives me blowjobs all the time, right?
Right.
Can you get a cold like that? Because I have...
From that.
Yeah, because I'm sick.
I hope not.
I think okay. It's kind of like getting pregnant on the toilet seat.
Yes. Yeah,
it's a myth.
That's about, not what yeah. you kept telling me.
It's about
me.
On the same level as that.
That's horrible.
Don't worry, you'll be fine. You'll be fine.
I think sometimes we take it too far, though.
Yeah,
to joking.
What are you talking about?
It's too early for you to get that far, too.
Oh, yeah.
Gotta warm the audience up first.
Sorry, audience.
Yeah,
Adam doesn't do that.
You gotta breathe on it a little first.
He doesn't bring me flowers
anymore.
Dang,
I know.
That's the first time
is
you've
that
been.
Barbara Streisand.
You were. Who was
I'm
that?
I'm calling you out right now, Sal.
Is that Barbara Streisand?
That's an embarrassing reference. Is all I know.
God damn it. I don't know
it's
who
really
that
bad.
Was who's saying that.
Yeah.
It's horrible.
You know what's worse?
What?
I know it too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. You know what? Fuck. It's true. You can't talk shit because you finished it.
I know.
You finished the tune.
I do that a lot.
Yeah.
Things.
Has anybody worked out yet today?
No. Only you get up early.
Today?
Do you do that, Justin?
No, I do. I do like 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, whenever we're done with the day. That's usually when I do it.
Where do you go? You go head over to?
This like mom and pop gym.
Oh, the one by your house?
Yeah.
God, I can't wait till we have our stuff.
I know, right? Ah, oh, I just sent an email. I'm really trying to get that here. I want that equipment.
Did you get my message that I said we're actually here till Tuesday? So we or Wednesday even.
Yes.
So we have until next week. So if they can't,
I put the hustle back on them. So okay. We'll see if they come through.
Okay. I have yet to work out. I mean, you Adam had a workout here
twice
with the kettlebells. Two times you did.
Two times I did.
I'll just do that. I'll just hang out.
Katrina and I came in here on Saturday. I think it was. I was in here on Thursday or Friday also when we first got them, and I did mostly just like stick work and mobility stuff. Not a lot, a little bit of kettlebell work, but not much. But we did a full kettlebell workout on Saturday. Came in and I thought I'd take her through that. That would be her first time ever doing something like that. So I thought, oh, this would be cool.
You know what's one of the most underrated movements that I've started incorporating with the kettlebells? Hmm. It's underrated because even I underrated it. I don't really think it would do much for me. But I'm noticing strength gains and muscle development gains from incorporating this, and it's the holds, the kettlebell holds and walks and stuff like that.
Dude, of course.
See, yeah, I know you say that, but
because you've been doing it and been disciplined and doing it.
Yeah, because it's isometric. Yeah. Because it's, you know, I never really thought it was like that big of a deal.
Yeah.
But it's a big fucking deal, man. I'll hold the kettlebell in the rack position.
Mm-hmm.
I'll do one arm sometimes or both arms, and I'll just walk.
Yeah.
And, you know, do sets like that and get a real heavy one and stay real tight. And I'm noticing a lot, actually a alarming amount, not alarming, but shocking amount of carryover to my other traditional lifts.
It's crazy, man. And it like, I noticed the same thing. And so I know you're kind of tripping on that right now. That's exactly what I felt when I started to incorporate that and overhead walks and carries and suitcase carries. To be honest, suitcase carries, one of my favorite oblique exercises I could possibly do.
Yeah, huge. Like I started
just start adding more weight on your side and adjusting, just walking.
Dude,
super simple.
I can do shrugs. I can do rows. This and that. Man, nothing will make my upper mid back like feel sore or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Like heavy carries or walks with kettlebells, like suitcase carriers, or if I do both kettlebells and I get a real heavy one, or now that we have that 128 pounder.
Yeah.
I want to do some short walks.
We're all
going to
be
fucker.
Throwing that one around. Yeah, we're going to need the 200 here soon.
Well, isn't this a lot of what inspired you to do the stick? Isn't this what you just learning this yourself? Because out of all of us, you probably have incorporated the most isometric move.
Mm-hmm.
I shouldn't say moves. It's not a move. It's a hold. You know,
that's the key, Adam. You don't
not
move.
Yeah, right. So you've probably incorporated the most out of all of us, I'd say.
Yeah. No, it definitely sparked a lot of that. And going through the mobility, I realized that like just the tension of it when I would try and apply certain leverage positions with the stick and all that, I'm like, wow, like I really get a nice response out of my muscles, and let me just hold it in this position and then really drive into it and get more connectivity. And then that totally sparked a lot more thought process with me as far as, well, you know, I really feel connected. I feel like now I go into my lifts and I can pull, you really just feel more muscle recruitment and more involvement in that same movement, you know, just doing that in conjunction. So.
And something else I learned with the holds is I seem to respond better, and maybe you can back me up on this, Justin, when I do them at a moderate high intensity, not at an extreme high intensity.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah.
So rather than getting like a kettlebell where I can barely make it the distance I'm trying to walk, where at the end of it I have to drop it because I'm like, oh, fuck, you know.
Yeah.
Rather than doing that, I get a weight that's relatively hard, but that I'm kind of creating this intrinsic tension.
Yes.
And then I just practice it. You know, it's something
I can
do
more
frequently.
Control. Yeah, you have more control, and it's more, you're not totally fatigued, and you're not trying to fight this exhaustion going into like a regular lift. So yeah, like you said, if I'm going to do like an isometric walk of some sort where I'm loading my body, I don't want it to be overbearing to where it affects how I'm walking and you know, my steps and everything are going to be all awkward. I want to make sure I have good control.
Otherwise it's counterproductive.
Right.
And I think this is probably as a trainer, the hardest thing that we probably have to deal with clients is, you know, you teach a move like this, and then you catch people just trying to carry as much as they possibly can. I was watching a couple guys. I forget his Instagram name, but they were doing farmer walks, and they were just, I mean, they were doing them with like carrying like 600 or 700 pounds or whatever. And, you know, people see that and then they become so infatuated with the amount of weight that they're carrying across. And it's just, it's about more weight, more weight, more weight. Mm-hmm. And really it's more about how you move first and then you progress the weight. So I think that is important to note when you do a move like that, especially like a suitcase carry where, you know, I can carry a 200-pound dumbbell on one side. It'd be awkward as fuck, you know, and I wouldn't do that for farmer. I wouldn't do that for suitcase carries because I couldn't keep myself controlled. Like I wouldn't be able to keep myself upright and hold a 200-pound. Mm-hmm. I could do it, mm-hmm. but doing it with good posture while I'm and walking with a good gait. Mm-hmm. I think people need to understand that part of it is as important, if not more important, than you progressing in the weight.
Well, what it's done for me is it's also reinforced this, and this is relatively recent for me, if you consider all the years I've been working out, where I don't think of exercises as tools
stationary.
To cause... Well, no, I don't think of exercises as tools to cause damage.
Uh-huh.
I think of exercises as things I need to practice.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very different approach. Like, if I think of it of an exercise as a tool to create damage, well, I'm going in there to damage muscle. I'm going there to fuck shit up,
mm-hmm.
which is very different than I'm going in there to really get good at this exercise and practice it and do it frequently. And the difference between the two in terms of results is stark. It's stark. It's a stark difference. If I treat the exercises like practice, where it's still a moderate to high level of intensity, but I'm doing it so I'm perfecting it over and over again. And I'm doing it 3-4 days a week. My strength gains are faster and smoother. And I don't have problems like I would if I were just going there to fuck shit up.
Yeah.
You know, and it really hammers at home that the holds and the carries really lend themselves well to that. And then I take that and I carry it over to all my other lifts, my squats, my deadlifts, mm-hmm. my overhead presses, where I'm just going in to perfect them.
Yeah, I can't wait to, like, once we get a sled, same concept, like, led me down the same road with the holds and the walks. And really it's about strengthening the kinetic chain and how the body moves and adding load appropriately and then adjusting your body appropriately. And so there's a lot of different techniques mm-hmm. and moves you can do with the sled where, you know, you're actually moving through this exercise. I just love moving and then also challenging the body in new ways instead of being stationary is why I said that because I, you know, for a long time I thought of a workout as having to be in one place and really it's this weird, like, freeing feeling when you start to work out and expand your range as far as even what you're doing in the gym and you're moving with your body with weight. So.
Yeah, I mean, think of it as practice. You know what I'm saying? Like, or as a skill. We talked about that in the past, but
right.
when you treat things like a skill and you need to learn them, your body's going to progress as you get better at that skill versus looking at a workout as, you know, I'm here to create soreness. I'm here to create damage.
Yeah.
It changes your intention when you work out. And a lot of people don't understand, but your intention that you go into with your workout has a massive influence
mm-hmm.
in terms of how you apply the repetitions, the type of intensity you use, your form, how you view your workout. You know, if I'm going in with the intention of damage, then I'm going to judge my workout based on damage. If I'm going in with the intention of practicing a skill, I'm going to judge it based upon my improvement in my skill. Mm-hmm. Which one is going to yield me better results in the long run? That's the skill, getting better at the skill. Yep. You know, think about anything. If I go in to do a handstand and practice, I've never done handstands before, but if I go in to do a handstand thinking to myself, like, I'm going to hammer my shoulders with this handstand, it's going to be very different than if I go in and try and practice a handstand and learn it. Mm-hmm. Now, over time, that practice will make
scale
that
scale it. Yeah.
And that what'll happen is my shoulders will develop. But if I keep going in there thinking I'm gonna hammer my shoulders with this and I haven't even learned the skill very well, I'm gonna get neither. Nor I'm not gonna get a better skill and I'm not gonna develop my shoulders.
Really, I mean it's crazy, but it's all about creating patterns and you know, everything, whether it's a neurological pattern, whether it's like a, you know, a specific type of movement pattern, where it's just a type of pattern that's gonna promote strength, or, you know, we talk a lot about adaptations, but, you know, these are all patterns you're establishing on a routine basis. And so, you know, you just have to reevaluate what it is that you're doing and the data that you're accumulating from the activity that you're promoting.
Well, this is also what we mean by recovery trap too.
Talk about the breakdown recovery trap.
Yeah, when people get caught in this where they're just, their body is so focused on recovering from getting hammered so much, it never really allows for it to adapt and grow and strengthen. So it's constantly getting beat up. And I think a lot of people do this and they don't realize they're doing this because they're in there. And this is why too, I used to always speak out on the, you know, beast mode and no days off and that mentality. And it's tough because you become that guy, and then we get people talk shit, right? We're team no sweat, or like, oh, sure. You lift like a bunch of pussies. Like, no, I just lift smart. That's all. I'm not in a competition to see who can work out the hardest. Like, that's not my goal is not to prove that I can work out harder than the next person. Like, my goal is to come in the gym and really do as little as I possibly can to obtain the physique that I want to walk around in and feel healthy and strong. Like, and that's not about, it's not about how the workload, where people correlate the two of those, and they really should not be, you know. It's unfortunate.
Well, a common thing that people will experience is that, and I hear this all the time. It's just happened to people that would work out in the gyms that I would manage. I'll get messages from people about this all the time. And this is what happens. They'll be working out for a long time. Then they'll go on a vacation for a week and not work out, and they'll come back stronger. Yeah. Like, that's a pretty good sign that what you were doing before was wrong.
Yeah.
Right? You shouldn't come back after a long layoff performing better. You know what I'm saying?
Dude,
if you think about it, you should come back if you didn't work out for 2 weeks, and you should have a little bit of a reduction in performance, not an improvement in performance.
Whoa, what is that? That's weird.
Yeah, like what is
doing
that?
It wrong.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, what is that telling you? That telling you that your body needed a fucking break, man.
Well, and we're laughing right now, but let's be honest.
What's happened to me, dude?
This is actually the reason why Sal knows that, and I can agree with you, is because I've put myself here many a times, and this just happened to me maybe 6 months ago or so, where I don't remember what I had. I must have had something where we were traveling, or something happened where I actually missed like a good 4 or 5 days in a row in the gym, which is very rare for me. It's rare that I miss 4 consecutive days in the gym. And I had done that, and I came back, and I was stronger than what I was before I had taken those 4 days off. And that's and that was like this light bulb always goes off in my head. I'm like, oh shit, like, I was overdoing it. You know, like, I was pushing myself beyond where I needed to be, because that's the sign to me that when I finally gave myself 4 days rest, I come back and I'm in a stronger position than that's not a good sign, you know? So people don't realize that's a great indicator for, you've probably been hammering the body a little bit rougher than you need to elicit change, you know?
Mm-hmm.
What?
He's coming already?
Today's Quaw is being brought to you by Chimera Coffee. It's the only coffee that is infused with all natural nootropics for a cleaner, calmer, and more focused buzz without the crash. Click the Chimera link at mindpumpmedia.com and input the discount code MINDPUMP at checkout for 10% off.
It's the motherfucking Quaw.
The eagle has landed.
Quee-qua.
Our first question is from ABC3TC. Is free-range meat really that much better?
This is I'll tell you why I like this question. I think when people start to read about what's healthy for them, the way they should be eating, you know, the foods that they should focus on, I think sometimes people get a little bit confused in terms of the priorities of things that they should be looking at when they're eating, you know, foods in terms of their health. The most important factors, the big bulk of the important things you should look at in considering when you're considering nutrition for your health, starts with calories and macros. Those are the big blocks. Like, if you ate a bunch of organic, you know, free range.
I'm glad you went this direction.
But you're eating like a shit ton of sugar. You're eating a shit ton of calories. Your macros are all over the place. You don't have enough proteins or fats or whatever. Your health is going to be very, very bad. So first things first, you know, get your calories and macros in order. Mm-hmm. Now, this is why. This is one of the reasons why the IIFYM crowd.
This is their argument they use.
This is their argument, and this is why they won't die. The problem is they take it to the point where that's all that's important, which is not true either. But it is extremely important. Like, you got to get those things down first. So if you're getting into eating properly, look at those things first. Nail those things down first. Mm-hmm. Then start to look at, you know, is it organic? Is it free range? Right. You know,
How can I improve the quality across the board?
Yeah, because for two reasons. Number one, it's definitely important in the long term. I think it's important to eat things that are organic and, you know, free range, all that stuff in the long term. But if you take your diet, which is shitty, and then your goal now is to eat the right amount of calories, start tracking your macros and go organic and free range and all that stuff. That's a lot of shit to throw at yourself all at once. And the likelihood of you staying sticking with that,
you
is
just
very
stopping drinking sodas is going to do
a
massive improvement.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, and I think that, and this is where, you know, if it fits your macros, the angle that the argument they try and use with guys like us who talk about the importance of organic food and free range and things like that, because we are huge advocates of that. But problem is, you argue that with these guys, the IFYM people, and they're going to come back to you and say, well, that's not the problem. The problem we have is overconsumption. People are overconsuming, you know, calories, and that's doing way more damage to your body than having a diet soda or having a chicken that's not organic. And they're right. They are right. Like, that is worse. Like Sal said, you focus on the big blocks first. You focus on the things that are going to make the biggest difference. But that doesn't mean that you just totally negate that. Like, you just say it doesn't matter, because it does matter.
Yeah.
It does matter. It does make a difference, especially in long term, right? Because that's the problem with all these studies that the IFYM people spout off, is they're all fucking 6 months long or shorter. So yeah, if you take those guys and you say and they tell you like, bullshit, it doesn't matter, I have this study that shows these people had this much sugar, which is a ridiculous amount, you know, for 6 months, and there were no adverse effects. Well, okay, well, that was 6 months. Show me 6 years, or, you know, 16 years, because it took me a lot longer than that. I told you guys this the other day. I don't know if I mentioned this on the radio. No, when I was like at my worst, and this is when I was a trainer. Okay, I'm a trainer, and I'm having like 2 rock stars. A day. I'm having a protein bar or shake at least one a day, and then another like artificial sweetener in my coffee or whatever every single day. And I did that for years and years and years and years. Mm. I'm 35 now. I'm just now in the last probably 5 years starting to see the adverse effects of that. And it was at 25 or 26 that psoriasis popped up. And at that time, I didn't even know that it could have been caused from all that stuff that I was doing. More than likely, though, now you can put that together, that where did this psoriasis, this autoimmune disease come from out of nowhere when I'm 25 years old? But shit, it explains a lot when you go back and you look at how many speed stacks and Rockstar colas and artificial shit that I can't even read the back of the label.
All the biochemicals you're consuming every single day.
Tons and tons of that, which is also why we're so passionate about speaking that to people, because I was reading the same bullshit studies that you're reading, that when you hear people like Lane Norton and stuff talking about, and his sidekick, that talk a lot about IFYM, and, you know, and they always, their argument, oh, show me a study. Well, I don't have a study that shows 15 years of, you know, what does it look like when you have a Red Bull every single day for 15 years straight? I don't have that study to argue that, but I tell you what, more and more stuff is coming out showing us on how much it does affect us.
Yeah, and you're starting to, you can piece together some of the clues. Like, we know, you know, artificial sweeteners affect your internal gut, you know, your gut biome, your gut flora. We know it influences it. We know it changes it on a fundamental way. So it's not that hard to imagine that you do that for 15 years, that you're going to have other side effects affecting, you know, all you know, kinds of things when it has to do with your health. So that's really the big problem. If you want to go with these long term studies, it's going to take a lot longer. I mean, artificial sweeteners and a lot of stuff, and the way Americans have been eating now, has only been happening for, you know, the last, I don't know, 40, 50 years. We're seeing obesity. Obesity has exploded. We're now starting to see autoimmune disease start to explode. So I think, you know, in another 20, 30 years, we're going to have more definitive answers when it comes to that kind of stuff. But yeah, all the studies are done. Even a year. Look, even a one-year study sounds like a long time. Like, whoa, this one-year study. That's nothing.
Yeah.
If you're eating this every single day for 30, 40 years, 1 year isn't going to show much. You got to look real long-term.
It's a very slow process.
Yeah. Now, that being said, I looked up some of the differences between, for example, grass-fed beef versus grain-fed beef. And here's some of the statistics on that. Grass-fed beef has a little bit less total fat than grain-fed beef, excuse me. But it has a lot more omega-3 fatty acids and CLA, which CLA is a type of fat that has anti-cancer effects, anti-inflammatory effects, and it's got some fat burning effects. In fact, it's actually sold as a supplement because of that. Now, I don't think you should take it as a supplement, but if you eat beef that's got more CLA versus beef that doesn't, it's probably better for you.
You simplify that, because let me tell you something. That's something that I learned later on how important that is right there, because it's, especially if we eat a diet that's rich in carbohydrates, you're already imbalanced as it is. And then you go to get meat thinking that your meat's going to balance your omegas out, but then you don't realize when you're eating this
your meat, it affects, like, what they're eating affects you too.
Yes.
That's all coming down.
It changes the profile chain. And you're not getting the same.
Yeah. If you eat red meat every single day, or let's say you eat it, 3 days a week and you do this for 10 years, will it make a difference to eat grass fed that has higher omega-3 fatty acids and some more CLA in it? Yeah, it will after a while. But right now you should focus on calories and macros. That's what we're saying. It also, for example, grass-fed beef also is more nutritious. It's got more vitamin A, vitamin E. It's got more micronutrients like potassium, iron, zinc, phosphorus, and more sodium. So overall, it's a healthier type of meat. But again, the priority, if you're getting started with this, is learning your body and understanding calories and macros. Once you really start to get that down, then start to break it down even further to improve your nutrition from that point. And it is a long process. I want you to understand, like, don't be frustrated with yourself if after 3 months, you're still not perfect. It takes a long time. If you're like 25 years old, well, you've been eating shitty for most of your life. You ain't gonna erase that in 3 months. Give yourself a chance. Like Justin said, just like eliminate soda. Start with that. And then, okay, I'm gonna double my servings of vegetables now for the next however long that, and make that consistent. Okay, I've got that down. Mm-hmm. Next, I'm gonna cut my sugar intake in half and then stick with that for a while. Ooh, that works. And now, one step by step.
Yeah, it's long lasting effect that way. It's something that, if you creep that in and it becomes something that's just part of your process, then that becomes the lifestyle changing effect instead of like the fixer. Like, everybody wants to get the immediate fixer. Let's just scale it, like, start small, something that you won't even really notice is different.
Exactly.
Well, we know that too. We know as trainers that the reason for that is because we need them to be consistent with something for long enough so they can actually finally see the change or feel the change because they made this decision, and it's not an overnight thing. So, I think sometimes when, people get bombarded with, this, all these things they have to change, it's so drastic that it's short lived, and it's even more short lived when people don't see like these quick results that they're expecting right away from it. Right. So, I can't stress enough how important it is that when we talk about eating healthy or eating better, that it's a lifestyle thing. We should always be striving to. Are we perfect? No. Very few people eat really, really perfect all the time. I know I most certainly do not, but you better believe that I'm aware of that and that I'm always striving to make better choices because I know how it affects my health.
This reminds me of, I actually had a friend of mine who was so proud and told me, hey, I switched my kids' treats to organic, and I was like, what do you mean by that? Like, I don't buy the regular cookies anymore. I bought these organic ones, and it's like, well, I mean, you laugh, but I think a lot of people do that.
I know.
Go to Whole Foods.
It's just a label.
There is an entire section.
It's just marketing.
There's huge aisles filled with. Yeah. Cookies and candies and shit that are organic.
Well, that's what I do see out of this question too, is like the skepticism is this just marketing? Is this just a ploy to get us to buy something that's more expensive? And I could see that point because there is those shitty companies out there that will slap organic on whatever it is, a cookie or ice cream or whatever it is. And it's like, who cares? It's still like shitty.
It's still
for
a
you.
Fucking cookie. Yeah.
Well, and that's where I remember when we kind of got, I don't remember if this was on air or off air, when we were kind of getting in a debate with Joe D about his whole, his theory on organic and how it's just like, the regulations to even become considered organic are so close to shit anyway. So how can you even say it's a difference and yada, yada. And, and that's the system. And I'm saying that there's a system again, trying to manipulate and make a buck. And there absolutely is that. But
if I'm not mistaken, I was told this by somebody, I need to confirm it, but organic doesn't necessarily mean all organic. It means like the ingredients in the product need to be like 80% organic or whatever.
I know there's some serious leeway on it.
Yeah, it's not going to be perfect. We're obviously dealing with a system that's highly corruptible and highly influenced.
Right.
But it's another layer of protection. And here's the other thing, too. You got to remember this. Every time you buy something, you are voting for whatever you're buying. So anytime you give that product money or dollars, you are saying to the market, I want more of this. Every single time it's a vote, every single day. So if you want more, if you want organic to be a larger piece of the market, if you want more companies coming forward and fighting for better organic, and what I mean by that is, let's say organic becomes a huge, it's already a big market, but let's just say it becomes the market, like most foods become organic. Mm. What's going to happen is you're going to have companies that are going to compete for who's more organic.
Right, and you're who's even more healthy.
You're going to have companies that are more transparent, and they're going to say, well, our company
has a video, you can see it grow live.
And that's my point. So when you give them that money, you are voting for that with your dollars, and you are making that a larger market. And so consider that as well. So every time you buy something, think about, do I want more of this or do I want less of this? If I want less of this, I'm not going to give them money. If I want more of this, I'm going to give them money.
I vote yes.
Great point.
Next question, Art of April. What's the best way for a woman to get better at push-ups?
So this is a common question I get from women. I always get the, how do I get better at pull-ups and how do I get better at push-ups?
Uh-huh.
And it's always typically coming from women. And number one, obviously women are at a, you know, genetic disadvantage when it comes to upper body strength. So push-ups and pull-ups from a body weight, you know, pound for pound perspective tend to be more difficult. But the answer to this question is the same answer that I would give a man. It really doesn't matter if you're a man or woman. The way you get better at push-ups is the way you get better at push-ups. And the best way, honestly, to get better at doing an exercise is to practice that exercise a lot.
Mm-hmm.
However, it doesn't mean you should hammer yourself with that exercise. So the worst way to get better at push-ups, besides not doing them at all, is to do them and just beat yourself up and go to failure doing push-ups. I know a lot of people do that. Like, I want to get better at push-ups, so I'm just going to hammer myself with them. The best way is to get into a position where you're doing a push-up with good form. So if you can't do a full push-up off your feet, then maybe do it off your knees. If that's still too difficult, elevate your body. So maybe do it off a table or something like that.
Yeah.
And just practice them throughout the day. You're not even working out. You're literally doing, let's say your max push-ups is 10. Like 10 is failure. Every time maybe every other hour, do like one or two push-ups off the, just one or two. Just practice doing it. And you will notice within a matter of days that one or two becomes easier, and you'll be able to do three, then you'll be able to do four. It's one of the fastest ways I've ever seen people get stronger.
You're promoting, like we talked about earlier, you're promoting a pattern, and you're teaching your body the sequence of firing that needs to happen in order to be able to develop the strength to overcome and press your body up off the ground. So it really just comes with frequency and discipline and keeping that involved in your daily habits. But, you know, there's obviously a scaled approach as well. So, you know, if you want to work on depth, or if you want to work on, other techniques where you're in an isometric hold or something where you can build up a louder signal for you, I suggest, working on that as well. That will really help you to be able to gather and recruit muscle fibers to get involved.
Yeah, so a technique I learned a long time ago with push-ups that I found at the time fascinating, but now it makes perfect sense now that I know more about how the central nervous system works better when it's all activated versus when you're not really calling upon it, is this with push-ups. Try this. When you get into your push-up position, before you do your push-up, grip the floor with your hands. Mm-hmm. You're obviously not going to be able to grab the floor, but the act of tensing your hands and
squeezing
the floor,
your fingers,
and then into the ground. And then on top of that, without moving your hands, create external rotation. What I mean by is, while your hands are on the floor, try to spiral them out.
Spin them out,
but don't actually spin them out. Just create that tension where you're kind of twisting them out and gripping the floor. You'll activate your muscles in a much more effective way, and you'll be able to squeeze out more push-ups. Mm-hmm. It's actually a pretty effective technique that I tried.
A tip I would give, just because I think most women, Sal's right. I mean, how you would get a man or a woman better at push-ups is exactly the same. But what I have found more common with my women, and a lot of times, especially like a big-breasted woman.
All my ladies.
All my ladies got big titties.
Her shoulders are excessively rounded forward, so she suffers from upper cross syndrome, so she's really rounded forward, and she's already weak in the push-up department. So then she goes to do a push-up, and she's all deltoid, and she can't get deeper than 90 degrees. And then her way of trying to do better push-ups is she does these piked-looking shoulder pushes and never really gets the chest activated involved. So a tip that I would do that's been very successful for teaching clients how to activate their chest is I will do push-ups from your knees, and then you'll do hand releases. So you'll actually come all the way to the floor. Mm-hmm. When you get your chest, everything's on the floor, you actually release your hand. When you release your hands, it forces you to squeeze your scapula back. So you pull the scapula back, and then you push off the ground.
So when you say release your hands, you mean I'm laying on my chest now. I'm taking my hands off the floor.
And you basically lift your hands off the floor.
Yeah, you lift your hands and just lay on the floor and
push
squeeze
them back down.
And then
come up. So you come all the way down the floor, release your hands, or retract your shoulders to where your hands come up off the ground. Mm-hmm. And then you push off again.
Yeah, I like that.
Great move. And then you just got to make sure that you keep strict form. So when you do that, you're not just muscling yourself up. Mm. And that's why you start on your knees. Even if you can do two or three push-ups on your toes, I would still take you to your knees and make you do these. Until you start to get that recruitment pattern down really well, where you're getting the concept of retracting the shoulders and pressing with the chest and not your shoulders. And this has helped many, many clients of mine develop a stronger chest or a better connection more so than a stronger, you know, so that's where they're
lying. I'm pretty sure, and I think I might have heard this on Joe Rogan's show, but they were talking about this as far as like how much weight that actually is, like a body weight push-up.
Yeah.
And they were talking somewhere around like 62-63% of your body weight that you're actually pressing up, something like that. So that I thought that was interesting, because if you actually put it into perspective as far as like pounds that you're pressing up, so you can kind of
a little more than half your body weight.
Yeah, a little
so
bit
if you're
more.
140 pounds, you're 70-80 pounds you're pressing up. Yeah, right, basically
most everybody I know that struggles with this, though, it's more of a technique thing, right? And getting the right muscles to fire, because Your chest is a big, strong muscle, but it's normally kind of put to sleep because of the way we have rounded shoulders, and our shoulders become so dominant in pushing movement. So getting that into a position, that's an exercise I find super beneficial. Also, try warming your back up first. So I'll take some bands, and I'll actually do a bunch of like kind of explosive rows with a real light band, just to wake up and get the shoulders retracted, firing all those muscles, your traps, rhomboids. So now you can pull the scapula back. Do that first, then go into those hand release push-ups. Guarantee you'll feel it in your chest more than you ever
felt
before.
Right. You're definitely right about like the larger breasts being a factor, because it's, you know, like the rounded shoulders and just the overall factor of like always being in a protracted position, and then, you know, not having that confident back, you know, retraction and getting that scapular retraction.
That's especially true with augmentation, breast augmentation. When they put the implant below the pec muscle, you are, in essence, causing the pec muscle to pull the shoulders forward a little bit, because now you're something underneath it, you know, mm-hmm. lifting that pec. And a, you know, somewhat, not super common, but if you're going to have a side effect of augmentation, you can get encapsulation, which is, you know, hardening tissue around the implant. And that then pulls the shoulders even further forward. In fact, I would say a decent majority of the women that I've trained that have augmentation have shoulder recruitment pattern issues. Mm-hmm. And I can usually link it back to the fact that they got the implant. Number one, because they had to recover, so they're bandaged up and then they're put in this position. Then they have to, you know, get used to this tighter pec. That changes the recruitment pattern. And if they don't do the right exercises afterwards, now they've created this kind of permanent, you know, recruitment pattern that contributes to forward shoulder impingement.
Well, especially because the doctors normally tell them to stay away from exercises for a long time, and then they typically
they don't want them to rip or tear.
Yeah, so they stay away from that area for a while, and that's all it takes, man. You're right. I mean, you couldn't be more right when it comes to that, for sure.
One more thing. A lot of times with push-ups, I see a breakdown in core stability. So you know this if you're doing a push-up and your body is not rigid.
It sags.
Like a plank. Yeah. You notice this. I call them Ron Jeremy push-ups, where they go down, their hips dip, and they come up. Looks like they're having sex with the floor.
Yeah.
You know, if your body isn't like rigid the entire time, and if you're in this like crazy anterior pelvic tilt where your butt, you have a strong arch in your low back and your butt is sticking up, you have poor core stability in your push-up, and that will contribute to your inability to do lots of push-ups. So Brace your core, you know, brace your stomach like someone's going to hit you in the gut, and so you kind of tighten it. Grip the floor, spiral your hands against the floor, but don't actually move them. Stay real tight, and then do your push-ups and even practice the hand release. And I think, and then, of course, lots of practice.
Right.
Not tons of intensity, just lots of practice daily. And within a matter of weeks, you should be able to see a pretty good big improvement.
The more attention you promote, the better.
Cordy Elizabeth, do you have to count macros and calories if you eat clean? Is fat loss still possible?
It's like a trick question here. It is, because here's the thing about, I know we talk a lot, especially me, I talk a lot about, you know, listening to your body, eating intuitively, not needing to count macros and calories, but it took me a long time to get here. And the vast majority of the people listening right now who have never counted calories or never counted macros has zero idea how many macros. Their guess is going to be so off. In fact, I have yet to ever work with anybody who guesses anywhere near the real amount of food that they eat and the real amount, you know, the real breakdown of macros. Every single time I'll ask people, how many calories do you think you eat? And it's always like, oh, you know, probably about 1,700 or probably around 2,000 or 2,500. And then we'll add it up and it's like, well, you're 30% off. And that's calories. Forget macros. You ask people, how many grams of protein do you eat, or how many grams of carbs, or how many grams? Zero, zero concept.
Yeah.
So I think step one is learning that. You have to, in the beginning, the fastest way to intuitive eating and eating clean and healthy according to how your body responds to food, the fastest way to get there, the best way to get there is step one, counting and tracking. Actually tracking.
Yeah.
Because before you can get to that whole, you know, there's those four stages of learning we've talked about before. Before you can get to the unconscious competence stage, this is kind of the zone where you're just not even thinking about it. You just, you know, it's just natural, just coming to you naturally. You're eating properly and not even have to worry about it. Before you can get to that point, you have to become conscious of what you're putting in your mouth. You have to make yourself aware. And the only way to do this is to track.
Yeah.
So if you're at the point where you're fucking great, man, you're listening to the signals of your body, you eat according to them, and everything's just flowing and everything's great, and you know, health is great, and you're relatively lean, and you've been doing this for a long time. You probably don't need to track calories and macros to get leaner. You just kind of listen to your body and do it, go accordingly. But for most people, you're not there. You're not even close to there.
Well, I'm glad you said that, because I feel like it needs to come from you, because you are the one who talks a lot about intuitive eating, and I stress highly that counting your macro, and I hate calling it macro, tracking your food and what you're intaking, I think is so important. I think learning your body and learning nutrition is every bit as challenging as learning a language. And just because you know a few verbs and adjectives, I don't think you would feel confident with going up and standing on a stage and giving a speech in a language that you're not super familiar with. So think of it the same way when you're learning about nutrition and food and what you should be consuming to whether it be get to a goal or maintain where you're currently at. That takes some time.
And well, that's just the learning process of that alone, not to mention like you learning how it affects you.
Right.
Personally, that's a whole nother subject matter.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it's not as simple as just you know, you feel like, oh, I understand what a fat is. I understand what a carb is. I know these are bad. I know these are good. You know, those are all that's the basics. I mean, you just went through basic English. You know, you just learned barely learning the language now. Like, there's so much more to learn and how it affects your own personal body. And that takes tracking, or else it's a guess every time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I don't track, like the way I found out how certain carbs affect my body is because I was tracking and I said, oh, wow, look at this. When I eat like this, I get inflamed like that. When I don't get enough of this, I feel like this. When I do all this, I feel like that. But I wouldn't know that unless I was tracking. And I can't stand when, and Sal will tell you, when we first got together and we were doing this a lot, I would give him shit all the time because he would be like, oh, I did this, you know, I feel this. And I'd be like, well, are you tracking? Let me see. And he's like, no. I'm like, oh, then I'm not going to believe you. I can't take your word for it. I don't care how knowledgeable you are, but if you didn't track it and you didn't, and then how
it's,
do I
it's
know?
It's hard to believe I'm this awesome.
But, you know, he's somebody, if there's anybody who could do that, he would be the man because of how long he's been doing this for, and I still give him shit that, dude, you gotta if you're gonna sell me on this new food or this way of eating is affecting you in this way, I want to look at numbers. I want to look at, okay, show it to me. Show me how many days in a row you ate that many carbohydrates, or how many days in a row your fat was that high, and then let's talk about these things that you think you're feeling in a direct correlation with those foods. And if you don't have it tracked, then you don't know. You don't know for sure.
Well, then you're always going to be a passenger. And I think that's why we always stress the point of like being dependent on somebody else's plan for you, or somebody else's prescriptive, macro count, or, somebody like, no, you shouldn't be relying on somebody else to provide that information for you. You should be researching that. And that's why we create guides. We stress it all the time, but that's why, the reason and the why is for you to do the work, because you're only going to be successful if it applies to you. And, you can work with a professional that can help you figure that out for sure. And I suggest that you do that, but you have to do the work, and avoiding the work is just going to create a temporary thing at best.
Yeah. And my thing with macros has always been this, is that it is a very important first step. Very, very important. If you're just getting started with this and you've never counted before, and you really don't have an idea of what your food looks like from a, proteins, fats, and carbs and calories standpoint, then you need to figure that out. However, once you start to figure that out, it can lead you into some pitfalls. It can lead you to this extreme control issue when it comes to food. It can lead to bad relationships with food. In fact, that's very common amongst the people who are in the fitness industry, especially people who compete based on their physique. People in Adam's kind of Adam's peers, a lot of them, if not most of them, have a very poor relationship with food, and they count macros and calories all the time, and they use it to this. It becomes this obsessive thing where it has to be within this specific parameters, and it becomes this control thing. And that's not where you want to end up. You want to use this tool. You want to get a good idea of where you need to go. You want to master it. But then you want to progress beyond it, because then you've stopped. You've stopped mm-hmm. yourself from the panacea, from the ultimate goal, which is, and I'm telling you, I say this all the time, and people probably laugh and think, oh, that sounds, foo-foo. But I'm telling you, when you finally get to the point where you eat intuitively mm-hmm. and it's not an issue, it's not something you need to sit there and track and write everything down, but you're doing it right, and the signals, you've listened now to the signals of your body, you've now connected the dots between foods and all the different things, signals that your body tells you. When you get to that point, it is a wonderful place to be at. Yeah. It is effortless.
It's freedom and flexibility. Bro, it's everything you want.
Bro, for the first time in my life, and look, getting lean for me was never hard in the sense that I couldn't do it, because I knew what I had to do to get there, right? But it's never been on like a side effect. Like I walk around lean all the time, and I don't have to. It's not something I think about. It's not even something that's not even the back of my mind. It's just not there at all. It's a side effect. It's never been like that for me before. It used to be, in order to walk around at 8% body fat, I had to really pay attention. I had to kind of pay attention to what I was doing, and it took work.
Yeah, sacrifice and work and focus.
None of that. There's none of that now. It's just. That's just the way I look now. Like, I walk around this lean and this is my natural body fat percentage. That is a very good place to be. So, and that's where you want to get to, but it takes a long time to get there. And the first step is understanding, and really understanding, calories and macros and what is in food. And then once you learn that, once you really get that, your goal is to progress from there, because if you get stuck there, that's not ideal. Then it becomes this control thing. It becomes this bad relationship to food. And you don't want to get stuck there, because I've seen people who are stuck there, and they may be a little better off than the person who knows nothing, but they're not
that much
well
better.
Off. Yeah.
Yeah, no. But here's the thing too with this. Like, I have no patience with people that aren't willing to do this, because shit is so fucking easy now. I mean,
oh, you got so many tools.
When I first started tracking, I would write on my little piece of paper or journal I had. Then I had to go home and open up my nutrition book. Then I had to go individually look at each one of the foods that I consumed and the weight of it. And then I had to go over
God forbid you eat at a restaurant. Impossible.
I mean,
wouldn't even give that information.
Now you have apps like MyFitnessPal and Fat Secret that literally, before you finish typing what you're consuming, it fucking populates for you. And then it calculates, and then it breaks down all the macro and micronutrients and sodium. I mean, it literally could not make it any easier for you to track and figure things out. I mean, before I understood, I got it, man. Like 10 years ago, ask a client to track their own food and it's like, Jesus, you're asking them to go to school, you know what I'm saying, on top of their long work day and raising their kids. Like, that's crazy to me. But now, I mean, you could literally be eating one in one hand and uploading what you're consuming in the other hand at the same time, and it's literally that easy. So do yourself a favor and start doing that, and you'll start connecting the dots, especially if you listen to the show, because we constantly talk about these things.
And I will tell you what, you know, once you get that down and you start to move beyond that, like I'm talking about, it's pretty interesting. You know, there's someone I'm working with, in fact, right now. I just started, online coaching someone, and she was telling me how she has digestive issues and some bloating. And I said, well, when do you notice this? And she's like, well, in the morning, after I have my, chia seed, hemp protein, and a couple other things, shake. And so I said, well, she's like, but it's really healthy. So, well, have you considered that it's probably not right for you if it's causing bloating? But, you know, and here's the thing. She's in the fitness industry, but she never connected that. And you can hear her on the phone being like, oh, yeah, I guess there's something in that my body doesn't like. And that's the next step. That's the next step, is making those connections. Once you get to that point, it's a whole nother world of learning. But once you're done, once you kind of graduate from there, man, great place to be.
Oh, yeah.
Juan Martinez 9966. What is the most embarrassing thing that's happened to you on a date?
Oh, geez.
What? Yeah. What are those?
You guys got to go first. I just started dating, so I don't know. I
mean, no, bro, you have to go first because you're the one that put this up there on the board. So
you guys have so many dating stories, I'm sure.
Oh, my God.
I was married for 15 years, and now I have a girlfriend, so.
Most embarrassing thing.
I can tell you what happened. It's not that funny, but it's kind of a little bit, not embarrassing, but more like, oh, fuck. So I have a lot of family that lives in this relatively same area that I live in, that I've grown up in, right? In the San Jose area. So odds are, if I'm going to go places, especially if it's a mall or something like that, I'm going to run into someone that I know, family or whatever. So, I've been divorced now for, it's going to be almost a year coming up here in December. But there's a lot of cousins and stuff that I haven't talked to. I don't see these people super regularly, and we don't really talk about this kind of stuff. And it's not like this big, this big thing that I'm posting all over Facebook. But, I'm at the mall yesterday. I'm with my kids and, my girlfriend, and we're walking around. And then, oh, there's some fucking cousins I haven't seen for a while. And you should see the looks on their faces.
They're scratching their head.
Who's that girl that you're with? That's not your wife. Because they didn't. I don't think they knew.
Yeah.
And that's a really, I'm sure people who are listening right now who are divorced, who are married for a while, I'm sure they kind of, especially when you're from a small town, it's kind of weird, man.
Yeah.
Walking around having people they're looking at you like, who's that?
That's got to be kind of awkward.
Super awkward. I don't know if it's embarrassing though.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of an embarrassing one right now. I just shared a story. So Katrina and every now and then, her and I will sit down and share old relationship stories. And it's one of my favorite things.
With each other?
Yeah, with each other. That's one of my favorite things to do with her. We've been together for 6 years.
You're like, one time I was banging this girl super hard.
She is someone I could actually tell her weird stuff like that. Yeah, we do talk about weird stuff like that. So we met each other at 30, right? So we started dating when I was 30 years old. So, I mean, I had quite a bit of dating and crazy girlfriends leading up to her. And we always talk about...
You definitely have had some crazy girlfriends.
Yeah, so that was... I'll share a crazy story or a crazy girlfriend story, since that's what I just shared with her. And that's the first thing that comes to mind when I think of this, because I can't think of a crazy, embarrassing one. So I'll give you guys a crazy story. So I dated this girl when I was around 25, 26-ish. So I had had my house for about 5 years. And she was a traveling nurse, and she used to work the crazy late night shifts, right? And then she would be home during the day. Well, after we'd been dating for a while, you know how it works. Like, we didn't officially move in, but she left her toothbrush, and then she left an overnight bag, and then overnight bag turns into part of my closet. Next thing you know, she's there, right? So that's kind of was my MO when I was younger and had my place. And she's now in my place. We've been together for, I don't know, probably at this time close to a year. And it's the first time that I am at work and she's at home all day because she worked the night before, and it's the first time she's in my house and I'm not there. So I come home, and I'll never forget coming home, and she's standing at as soon as I open my front door, Justin knows what it looks like. As soon as I open, there's my kitchen counter right there, and she's standing, and she has the bitch stance, right?
Posture.
The hips.
The one foot turned out a little bit.
Yes, one foot's kicked out.
What is that? That's like a universal,
power move.
Yeah, it is. It's definitely a power stance. So instantly I'm on the defense. As soon as I walk in, I can see this, and she's leaning on the counter, hip cocked out, and the look, right, already. And it looks like she's been crying, angry, probably talking to her friends and shit. And I walk up to her, and
they never make the friends never make her feel better. They only make her worse.
Of course, they fire her up more, right? Probably get in her head. So she is on the counter. There is a condom wrapper.
Oh.
There is a hair tie, and there is one booty sock. And she's looking at me, and she says, "What the fuck is this?" And I go, a booty sock, a hair tie, and a condom wrapper.
Justin left it.
She goes,
yeah, man. I was just visiting.
She goes, "What are these doing underneath your bed?" And I go, "Oh, shit. I don't know." I'm like, and then it like dawned on me. I said, "What are you doing underneath my bed?" And she goes, "I was cleaning the house.
I hide there."
Right. She tells me she's cleaning the house. And at that moment, she says she cleaned the house, and she was under, that's how she found this stuff under my bed. I look to my left, and there's a stack of dishes in the sink. And I look back at her and I say, "Wait a second. You decided that you were going to clean my house for the first time, and you started underneath my bed and you didn't make it to the kitchen?" Explain that to me.
I bet that you know, Adam, I don't think
that went over well.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, I don't think you were being very effective.
Yeah. These are my early years. Like, I was a better communicator later on. Yeah.
You're like, "Hey, babe, listen, just next time start in the kitchen, you know what I'm saying? Because that's where you belong."
But really, though, this was that first sign to me that she's a little bit crazy, because I'm thinking to myself, like, that would, in her head, that probably seemed logical answer to me, knowing that I'd probably ask her, "How did you find that under my bed?" And she'd be like, "I'll just tell the motherfucker I was cleaning the house, and then he'll feel even more like an asshole." But I'm looking over at a stack of dishes on my sink, and I'm going, like, I don't know, if I'm gonna clean a house, I'm probably gonna start on the kitchen sink before I work my way to the master bedroom underneath a bed. And I look back at her and I say, "You know, I'm 25 years old. I've had my own place since I was 20. I can't tell you the last time I cleaned underneath my bed." So I can't tell you who that booty sock is. I can't tell you who that condom wrapper goes to. And I can't tell you who that hair ties. For all I know, they're all from you. I said, "But if they're not from you, I don't know who the fuck they are from." Because, and they could be from a whole different lot of people in the last 5 years.
I've had parties.
Yeah. So that should have been, you know what? And I think we dated for another 6 or 8 months. And later on, people told me all kinds of other crazy stories. But that was part of my learning process of, you know, when you see a sign like that early on in a relationship, you're supposed to, like, that should be a sign, and you get out. Instead, for me, you know, I stayed in it much longer, learned the hard way.
They're checking your shit.
Yeah, of course. She ended up being one of those crazy ones that did all that stuff. And one of my trainers told me that. And people come to you afterwards, right? The girl's no longer in your relationship.
Oh, I always wanted to tell you.
And then you tell them like how crazy she was. And like, "Oh my God, you know, I'll never forget when I had a trainer. My trainer was training her, and he goes, "You know, one time we were in the middle of a set in the gym, and she just fucking bolted out of the gym and ran outside in the parking lot in the middle of our session." And then she comes back and she's frantic, and she's like, "Where's Adam?" And he's like, "I don't know. He probably went on his lunch break. His car's not in the parking lot." And he's like, "Man," he's like, "it was so weird." And then she didn't realize that you had parked somewhere else in the parking lot. And he was like, "Really? Like, you're crazy. Why would you do that?" And she ended up buying him lunch to keep his mouth shut and never tell me. And I had all these stories that started coming up later on. I thought, man, you guys are fucked up, dude. Like, if I got a crazy bitch, you got to tell me, dude. So, but I should have known better anyways, because I saw that sign.
Hold on a second.
Wait.
How was the sex?
Yeah.
Well, of course it's good.
Yeah, it's always.
The crazier they are, crazy, the better ones, it is. Huh? That's also another sign to all you guys, too. Just because it's amazing sex doesn't mean it's the right one either, too.
Damn it.
I was trying to think of something that won't get me in trouble. Here's as PG as I can go. So I actually have, it wasn't even somebody I was dating, so this is the awkward part. I was at work in, dude, restaurants. Can I just tell you, restaurants, like, it's a crazy place to work. Like, everybody hooks up.
That's what I heard, man.
Oh, it's crazy, man. It literally, like...
But it's like a gym. Gyms are like that.
Yeah, it's just like a gym. I guess I've been, like, that's all of my work environments. What does that say about me?
And then your wife is a nurse, which is the other high
yeah,
one.
Yeah, exactly.
You know that? Like,
hospitals, I pretend gym. To be a doctor a lot, so... But, yeah. No, like, so this one girl, she just got hired.
Dr. Felter Snatch.
Yeah, I mean, she was attractive and all, and, she, you know, she had something going for her. And, we just finished work, and I was bartending at the time, and so... And I was closing up shop, and like a couple of people wanted to go out after work. And I'm like, okay, cool. You know, we'll go out to work, grab a drink, whatever. And like we hung out at this bar, and we all had a couple of drinks. And you know, people started singing karaoke, all this stuff. And like, you know, one thing to the other, I end up making out with this girl, right? And the next day at work, you know, I didn't go back to her place. You know, nothing happened. It wasn't like anything like, I don't know. I didn't take it anywhere. And the next day, like at work, I'm cleaning. I'm getting ready for the bar, like getting ready for the day. And this girl comes in with her dad, and she starts coming up, and she's introducing me as like her new boyfriend and all this stuff. And like, you know, going off about like how great
shit.
I am and all this shit. And I'm like, I'm like, bitch, I just made out with you. And now we're dating? Like, what the fuck? I must have missed that one. You know? And so she just kept going parading on and on that, like, that you know, I'm her brand new boyfriend and that she's so happy. And I'm like, yeah, hi. And I'm like, had to shake her dad's hand and everything. And
oh, that's hilarious.
Like, oh, my God, it was so awkward.
That kind of falls
you're such
in,
a jerk.
That falls in the category of crazy girl with me.
Bro,
I think you and
tell
I.
Tell me that's not crazy.
That is crazy.
It is crazy, but yeah. I feel bad for her.
Come on, man.
Another girl.
She
that,
moved on.
Another
she,
girl.
She did like the same thing to one of my other friends. So she
left in the wake of Justin's damage.
Hey, man. Yeah.
There's a lot of girls out there.
You can have
there.
That. You
There's
can
a
have that.
A lot of broken hearts out there, Justin.
Yeah. What can I say?
I hate to say it. Yeah, I have a. This isn't really an embarrassing date story, but I don't know why I thought of this story, but I had a. I was working at a gym, and my buddy was the manager. And he used to have this girl that would show up. And now this is back in the day. You guys know this. Back in the 90s, you know, the late 90s in the gym industry, especially where we worked, it was a little Wild West. You know what I'm saying? Like, shit happened. And it wasn't.
I like how you're setting the table for this. Right
there wasn't an HR department. Like, it was, you know what I mean? Like, shit happened in the gym. And if you produced numbers.
Less regulated.
Yeah. If you hit up big numbers and you did well and, you know, your members were happy.
You kind of turned a blind eye.
Everybody got, yeah, exactly.
It's kind
of
code.
So my buddy, my buddy used to have this girl would come visit him and he'd go in his office and he'd close the door. And he's, you know, probably having sex with her in there. And he would do this, you know, at lunchtime, whatever. She'd show up, go in there, and, you know, 30 minutes later, she'd walk out, and her hair would be all disheveled or whatever. And I knew he would, you know, having sex with this girl. And, you know, a couple times I needed, like, a membership agreement or something. I'd bang on the door, and, you know, he'd kind of open it like a crack and, like, throw the agreement through the door and close the door because he knew what he was doing. But I had his back, and it was all good, and we were good friends. Well, I guess he was in there, and he was having sex with this girl. And, you know, he finished or whatever, and he used, there was just this sweater that was on the floor, that was just on the floor, on his floor.
Oh, no.
And he picked it up and just wiped himself off. Now, this sweater belonged to this one fucking trainer who used to leave his shit everywhere. And we used to hammer him like, bro, don't leave your fucking sweaters and sweats and socks and shit.
Well, now you see what happens.
All over the gym, dude. This is not your office. Don't leave it on the floor. It's not your fucking room. Pick it up, put it in your bag, take it home. Like, stop being an asshole, right? But he never listened. He would just fucking throw his shit everywhere and whatever. So it was there. My buddy just wiped off his splooge and threw it back on the floor. Next thing you know, dude, like an hour later, right?
He put it on.
And he didn't even think about it. Like, he didn't even think about it. It's like, and it's forgot all about it, right? So next thing you know, me and my buddy are out there, you know, me and this guy are out there working out, right?
Yeah.
And in comes into the workout area comes the fucking trainer wearing the sweater. Now, I had no idea that this had happened. So my buddy's like, he looks at me and he goes, oh, fuck. And he hits me with his elbow and he goes, look at the back of the sweater. So as he like walks by, there's like this big like wet spot on the back of it. Oh. And I'm like, what is that? And he goes, it's my cum. I'm like, what? He's like, I used it to wipe off my splooge. It was on the floor. I didn't know it was him.
No.
So we were fucking dying and we never told him.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah, you can't.
Till now.
Ever. And this guy. Yeah,
you know who you are.
And this guy, he was such a cocky loudmouth, this trainer. But he was a good producer. You know, he was a good producer. He was a decent trainer. But he's just fucking cocky loudmouth. Every single time he'd get all cocky and I'm the best and blah blah blah, me and my buddy would look at each other like you had jizz all over you.
Yeah. One of my what you want, Spoogey.
I've lost all respect for you.
Yeah. One of my favorite stories.
That's great.
Hey, if you like Mind Pump, if you love our show, if you enjoy it, leave us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes. If we like your review and we pick it, you're gonna win a free Mind Pump t-shirt. Also, don't forget to check us out on Instagram at Mind Pump Radio. You can find me at Mind Pump Sal. Adam is at Mind Pump Adam. And don't worry about Justin. Just kidding. You can find him at Mind Pump Justin.
You're a dick.
Thanks for listening. Have a nice day.
Thank you for listening to Mind Pump. If your goal is to build and shape your body, dramatically improve your health and energy, and maximize your overall performance, check out our discounted RGB Super Bundle at mindpumpmedia.com. The RGB Super Bundle includes MAPS Anabolic, MAPS Performance, and MAPS Aesthetic. 9 months of phased expert exercise programming designed by Sal, Adam, and Justin to systematically transform the way your body looks, feels, and performs. With detailed workout blueprints and over 200 videos, the RGB Super Bundle is like having Sal, Adam, and Justin as your own personal trainers, but at a fraction of the price. The RGB Super Bundle has a full 30-day money-back guarantee, and you can get it now plus other valuable free resources at mindpumpmedia.com. If you enjoy this show, please share the love by leaving us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes and by introducing Mind Pump to your friends and family. We thank you for your support, and until next time, this is Mind Pump.